Don't you know who I am? I'm the Juggernaut, bitch!
So we end this run on a damper note.
Yeah. Boo. I hate this movie. I hated this movie in 2006. I still hate it now. This is the only second time I've seen it, too.
We were going to watch this movie together.
At the last minute, I think we both at the same time realized we were hoping maybe we'd watch it together. It'd be kind of a funny bad movie to watch.
Yeah.
But then I think we both realized that it probably wasn't going to be that. It was just going to be a slog. And yeah. We were correct. It's just a slog.
It is.
It's not funny bad. It's not good bad. It's just disappointing.
I couldn't agree more. I think there's a lot more to be said about the chaos behind the scenes of this than
the actual movie itself.
The actual movie itself.
Yeah. Full disclosure. I watched this about a week ago, and it has already completely exited my brain for the most part.
Well,
it is the most forgettable thing ever. And it all just feels so nothing. Like X2, we liked a lot. I love. It felt kind of smart, well put together. This is just a bunch of various ideas thrown together, and it's a mess. And it's bland.
Yep.
That's the review.
It's basically the movie that killed all X-Men team-ups for at least the next 4 years. We're talking 2003, X-Men The Last Stand. You can already tell with that damper music, the treat that we're in for.
Yawn, we're asleep. Should I do the stats before we get into it?
Sure.
I don't have very many because I don't care about this movie. X-Men 3 The Last Stand came out in 2006. Directed by Brett Ratner on a budget. Bryan Singer is gone, obviously. He went to do, I know you're going to talk more about this. He went to do Superman Returns and presumably Young Men. Budget was $210 million. I did not know this. This was the most expensive movie ever made at the time.
Sure was.
Hilariously expensive. Box office return was still very good. It made $460 million. So this did outperform X2, you know, but because it was so expensive, it's kind of hard to call it a success.
Yeah.
The cast is pretty much all the same. Kelsey Grammer as Beast, the lone bright spot, has joined.
Yeah.
I wish he would have been in X2. That would have been great.
Rotten Tomatoes, 61% audience. A lot of, so, I mean, the majority of people still gave it a favorable review.
Okay.
57 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, that seems high. Were people's expectations lower? And Rotten Tomatoes is weird.
Here's the thing about this movie. It's not as bad as people remember, I think.
No, I agree with that. As I was watching it, I was like, okay, this isn't as bad as I remember it being. I just thought it was really forgettable and not very good.
Well, that's the thing. You almost want it to be, and maybe I'm completely misremembering Spider-Man 3, but that is almost so bad it's hilarious.
Yeah, you get like the Bully Maguire stuff that came out of it.
The Bully Maguire, yeah.
Yeah, you get the fun dancing
bits. Topher Grace's Venom. Like.
Yeah, I've also only seen Spider-Man 3 once, and I remember it being just, yeah, funny bad, whereas this is just so bland. So I mentioned I'd only seen this once before, and upon reflection, I realized that this and probably also Spider-Man 3, I think, is the origin story of me being a Marvel hater.
Okay.
Because at the time, this was 2006, I had enjoyed the first couple X-Men, the first couple Spider-Man. At this point, I would have seen Blade, which I also liked. But 2005, a little movie called Batman Begins came out that everyone was losing their minds over, me included.
Right.
And that was so different from what we'd been seeing. And then these two crappy movies kind of come out, I think, around the same time. I think Spider-Man 3 would have been after this. And I just remember seeing, especially this, because I loved X-Men so much, and I loved X2. And I got, you know, I was gotten a little older. Now I'm in high school, and you see this crap, and you just go, oh, fuck that. I don't want to watch this stuff anymore.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of weird to think about. This was only a couple years before Iron Man. So Iron Man comes out, and by that point, I'm just out. I'm just disinterested.
Yeah. Yeah. The first two movies were like huge successes, critical successes, very good.
Yeah.
Bryan Singer was supposed to come on for this third one, but he had had an opportunity to do Superman Returns.
He was busy coming on something else.
Jesus.
Sorry.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
So he had said that he would do Superman Returns and then come back and do this. The studio was impatient, so they cut ties with him. They hired Matthew Vaughn to be the original director of this film.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
And he even got so far into the production that he filmed that first scene with Warren Worthington, Angel, the little boy cutting off his wings.
Okay.
That's all Matthew Vaughn.
You know what? That kind of makes a lot of sense.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't seem like it's in place with everything else that happens in this movie.
Uh-huh. I agree. It's horrifically dark. I could see that being a Matthew Vaughn thing. That makes a lot of sense. Look, it's very easy to make fun of Bryan Singer. He's a really talented director.
Yeah.
And he did a great job with those first two X-Men movies. Yeah. And I actually don't hate Superman Returns as much as other people do. I thought it was fine at the time. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Okay.
Talk about forgettable.
It's really forgettable. Yes, it's extremely... It's out of your brain the second you see it. Yeah. Obviously, I wish they would have waited for Bryan Singer to do Superman Returns and then come back to X-Men and finish it properly. That would have been better.
Yeah. So Matthew Vaughn had to leave because he had some family issues going on. They tried to get a bunch of different directors, and finally they scraped the bottom of the barrel.
Literally.
And we get Brett fucking Ratner, who is mostly famous for Rush Hour, I'd say.
I didn't know he did Rush Hour.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he's the one that ends up directing this. They're rushing production. The two blokes in charge of writing the script wrote 80 pages of this script in a fucking week.
Oh, jeez.
So they're completely rushing through this entire thing.
It shows.
Halle Berry doesn't want to come back unless she gets a significant role added to the film for her. So they have to accommodate that as well.
I just have to say, though, I completely understand where she's coming from. But Halle Berry in 2000, not a big star. Halle Berry in 2006, huge star.
Just coming off of Monsters Ball, winning an Oscar.
She had done the Bond movie, which wasn't great, but she had done Die Another Day, which was kind of the bad one. But it made a lot of money. It made her a big name. She's a star at this point.
She also did Catwoman, though, before this, correct? Or was that after?
That's a good question. I've never seen Catwoman. Yeah, it might have been before this. And I like her in this movie, so I'm okay with her bullying her way into an expanded role. I kind of get that. It's kind of the same thing that happened with Jennifer Lawrence in the later X-Men movies, where she when she was Mystique, she kind of, in First Class, she wasn't a very big star, and then you fast forward a few years, and she's like won Oscars and been in all these huge movies, and she just doesn't want to be there, clearly.
Bryan Singer's initial vision for this film was to have Jean Grey come back and be the Phoenix and kind of the split personality thing. However, it was going to be three factions fighting for the Phoenix. The Hellfire Club, which is introduced later on by Matthew Vaughn, and it's in First Class.
Okay.
The Brotherhood and the X-Men. And it's kind of a globe-trotting adventure where Phoenix is like also trying to save mutants around the world. Cyclops is going to have a more significant role. He builds a danger room to try to like become a better combatant and try to find ways he could have saved her. He's kind of this tortured soul.
This sounds so much better.
Right.
Just so much better.
Instead, what we get is...
What do we get
it
exactly?
It starts with a flashback of some of the worst de-aging I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
They use some state-of-the-art program called Lola, which does not age well at all.
No. It's jarring.
It's very jarring.
I remember seeing it in the theater, and I didn't even know what the technology was. I just went, "Oh my god, what?" I'm going to look into this at some point. I didn't care to because this movie's a big nothing. I watched this. Did you watch this on Disney Plus?
I did.
Okay, so did I, and I also have the DVD. I thought the faces looked a little better than I remember them looking, and I'm wondering if they've done a little touching up on Disney Plus.
It's possible.
Yeah. So at some point, I'm going to bust out the DVD and do some investigating.
Because I also remember it being jarring.
Yeah.
In theater.
Mm-hmm. It looks so weird. It's younger Ian McKellen and younger Professor Xavier.
And they go to Jean Grey's house. They find out she's got these, you know, more like extremely powerful telekinetic abilities. Mm-hmm. Telekinetic abilities, sorry. Professor X like wants to help her, kind of want help her control it. Magneto is kind of feeling the opposite. Then we fast forward to present day.
Yeah.
And you're seeing the X-Men in this huge battle. It looks like it's future. And you're getting some of Colossus, which Colossus looks weird too.
Colossus did look weird.
That was a metal suit they wrapped around him. It wasn't CGI.
Oh God. Okay.
To try to cut costs.
Uh-huh.
In an already bloated.
It's a $200 million movie. What were they trying to cut?
Yeah. It makes me wonder, like, the Iceman effects at the end too are spotty.
Very spotty. and Iceman's only full Iceman for like 10 seconds.
Correct.
And it's really bad.
Yeah.
They're fighting Sentinels in the beginning, right?
Yes, but you don't really see them. All you see at the end is like Wolverine cutting the head off of one.
Right, because it's too expensive.
It's too expensive.
And they were in the danger room, right?
They were in the danger room.
I don't know how to explain this movie. It went through my head like water through a sieve.
Yeah, Holly Berry continues to do these like tornado spins in midair, uh-huh. And I guess they had her actually doing that like on wires, and she ended up like barfing every time she did the shit.
Well, yeah, it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
Oh, what a weird decision.
Let's talk about the mutants that Magneto ends up recruiting.
Oh, the D team, you mean?
The D team.
The least interesting mutants that Magneto could ever recruit.
You've got Callisto, which they just kind of like combine two mutants with her. She's the one with the
spikes.
Or not the spikes. She can detect where other humans are.
Oh yeah, she's the like mutants. Yeah, she's the mutant detector person.
There's Spiky Dude.
Uh-huh.
I don't even know who he's supposed to be.
I don't know, Spiky Dude.
Multiple Man is in it. That was kind of fun.
Yeah, he's got Pyro is still there. He was in X2.
Wearing normal clothes. Most of these mutants are wearing normal clothes.
Yeah.
Which is, I hate that in itself.
It's so bland. It's so vanilla. Magneto, can we talk about Magneto for a second? Because yeah. I noticed in this, you know, again, the thing I love about X2 and even the first X-Men is it's that thing I like about X-Men, that philosophical differences that people are always kind of talking about. There's none of that in this movie.
No.
Or at least they kind of try. Magneto is just a mustache twirling villain. He's an extremist. He's just, no, there's a mutant cure. We'll get to that. We have to stop the mutant cure because that's bad and all mutants should be mutants and all people should die. There's no ideas behind him anymore. He's just the bad guy.
No, you can tell too, the dialogue has been dumbed way down. But when you're writing 80 pages of script in 1 week, mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, if you're just knocking something out just to get it done. You know what this felt like? It because it's not like the worst thing ever. This felt like maybe an okay story between X2 and the big conclusion. Where it's like, all right, this is just a run-of-the-mill generic action movie. We'll get to the good stuff later.
Right.
Whatever. But yeah, it's just depressing that this is the end of this trilogy.
One thing we've constantly complained about on this run is the treatment of Cyclops, and it cannot be any fucking worse than it is in this movie.
Just kill him off screen. We see him once. He's unshaven. He's mopey and sad. Then he drives back to the dam where Jean Grey died. And she's just been there the whole time? That's the question I had. How long does this movie take place after X2?
Two years?
Yeah, people have clearly aged. The kids have gotten older. They're like on the team now, and they were just students. So Jean's just been hanging out in that river?
The scenario that Professor X lays out is that she wrapped herself in a psychic cocoon.
Oh my, yeah. I didn't remember him saying that, but now that you said it, it's in my head. She's in a psychic cocoon.
And okay. They can't go to space because we're still doing real and gritty here. So the Phoenix Force is just basically an alter ego. A split personality.
Now, you're more versed on comics than I am by quite a bit. In the comics, the Phoenix is a galactic entity, right?
Correct.
It's a space thing.
Correct.
And it possesses Jean?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In this, the Phoenix, is her alter ego that's so strong and so powerful. The professor had to build like a wall in her head so she wouldn't just be a weapon.
Correct.
Which is all she's used for in this movie. She's just Magneto's heavy. That's it.
Well, Professor X is kind of an asshole in this movie, too.
He's a dick in this movie.
Like, Wolverine is telling Professor X, this is wrong, what you've done. And he's like, I don't have to explain myself to you. You of all people. Like, basically, fuck you. Your opinion means jack shit.
Yeah, you're stupid.
Yeah, get out of here.
Did you like Wolverine in this?
Not as much as I did in the first two.
Well, no, of course not. His leadership role felt a little more toned down, because I know they're giving Storm more of, like, more stuff to do.
Naturally.
Which I'm actually, that's maybe the one thing I'm okay with in this movie, because I've been very upfront about the fact that I think making Wolverine the central focus of the movies is kind of weird.
Right.
Yeah, but he was fine.
I don't know. I feel like the edge was taken off of him in this.
It was. He was goofier in this.
Yes, and more of mopey and just, I don't know.
Everybody's mopey in this. He wasn't a disgusting, animalistic cage fighter like he was in the first one.
Not smoking the cigars or drinking the beers.
Oh, yeah, the cigars were gone.
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
The beers were, too.
Yeah, you're right. That was all gone. This feels like this is way before Disney owning Marvel, but this could be a Disney production, you know?
It feels that way.
It does.
Even when he's attacking people in the forest, it doesn't feel as animalistic as that scene in the mansion in X2.
Oh, I was just going to bring that up. When he's just destroying dudes.
Yes.
Yeah. Flying off banisters and killing two, three guys at once.
It doesn't have the same feel.
No. No. It's also amazing how expensive this movie is, how cheap it all feels.
I agree.
It feels slapdash and like it was just thrown together.
Which it was. But with a huge budget.
But with an enormous budget.
The best thing in this movie, as we alluded to, is Kelsey Grammer's Beast.
Yes.
He looks great.
Yeah, he looks really good.
Sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he's on my screen, I was like, just keep going.
Yeah, well, and Kelsey Grammer.
Not the fighting either. The dialogue.
Yeah, the dialogue's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's the one bright spot in this movie. I think Kelsey Grammer's perfect casting, too. He's got that stately demeanor that Beast needs. He's the mutant representative to the president.
Yes.
He ends up being the ambassador by the end. The only good spot in this movie is him.
So Jean Grey kills Cyclops.
Off screen. Now, I had forgotten, because again, also a forgettable movie, but I had forgotten that James Marsden went to work on Superman Returns. That's why he left.
Yeah. There was also scheduling conflicts with Rebecca Romijn Stamos as well. That's why she has a limited role in this, too.
Which I hate.
Let's list, like, all the ways they fucked this up.
Okay.
Cyclops dies.
Yeah.
Professor Xavier gets farted out the window.
Mm-hmm. When Jean's the Phoenix, she explodes him.
Mystique, Rogue, Magneto all lose their powers by the end.
Yeah.
This feels like a finality.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I don't know why they did that. I mean, I don't know why they made this movie. Wait for Bryan Singer to finish Superman Returns and then let him do it. Yeah, it does feel like a finale. And I think that's one of the reasons I hated it so much when I saw it in theaters, was because it's a sucky movie. But also, I liked X-Men. And I'm like, oh, so just everybody's gone now? We don't have Jean Grey's gone. Cyclops is gone. Professor X is gone. Magneto doesn't have his powers. What are we doing here? But then there's kind of this sting at the end. I don't know. It's weird.
You introduced one of the best characters in this franchise in Nightcrawler.
They forgot to put him in the movie.
They were going to put Gambit. They didn't do that. You've got this love thing going with Iceman and
Kitty Pryde. Which is the only emotional arc that a character has in the entire movie is, oh, thank God, Iceman can get laid now by the end of the film. That's it. That's the only character payoff. Storm, no character development. Wolverine, nothing. Beast becomes an ambassador, good for him. Everybody else is either dead or has lost their powers, but thank God Iceman can have sex now. That's it.
Yeah, because Rogue decides they have this mutant cure. There's a lot of side plots going on here,
too. There's 100 threads in this movie, and they don't really all connect. It's got way too much going on. Too many characters. So go ahead. There's been a mutant cure created.
Correct. And like one scene in particular, Angel, Warren Worthington, his dad is trying to give him the cure. He says, no, I can't do this, and flies out the window. So they've got that going on. They've got the Brotherhood and Magneto.
Majestically flew out that window.
He sure did. He
looked like a GQ model.
The Phoenix. They got that bullshit going on.
Yeah. But they're not doing anything interesting with these plots. They're just all kind of there.
Yeah.
I actually forgot about the mutant cure because there's a whole chunk in the middle of the movie where they just like don't really talk about it. And then it comes back up. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what this film's about. The Phoenix isn't interesting. She's just a bodyguard for Magneto. That's it. There's nothing going on.
She kills Professor X. Him and Magneto try to go, but then Magneto tries to recruit her. Magneto has also broken out the Juggernaut. Let's talk about it.
Okay.
The Juggernaut bitch. It's the most famous line in this movie for all the wrong reasons.
Because it's horrible.
It's horrible. Deadpool has probably done Juggernaut the best.
That's right. He was in... I forgot about that.
Yeah. Right. Was he in Deadpool 2 or 1? I can't remember.
I think it was 2.
Yeah.
I think. I've seen both those movies only once.
So they've probably done Juggernaut the best, for sure. Whatever they were doing here is not it.
Well, they're going for comedy, like, again, making everything very light. Make it silly.
Juggernaut's not a mutant.
He's not? I didn't know that.
No, there's a whole other thing behind that.
Oh.
He's Professor X's stepbrother, so there's a big connection there.
Uh-huh.
He, like, finds some gem that turns him into that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This movie had too much going on. I'm fine with Juggernaut just being a mutant, whatever.
Right.
But there's already a million subplots going on.
You're right. But that's the thing. Like, he's a big enough villain where, like, he shouldn't just be a henchman for Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the sin that this movie makes is it tries to cram... I think comic book movies do this a lot, right? And I don't think it's very smart, where you're going to adapt a big epic storyline, right? Do it all in one movie. I do wish they would occasionally take a risk and do like a 3-movie arc. Obviously, they did that with Thanos. That built over a long time. But, you know, you're going to do the big Civil War plot. Okay, do that over a couple of films, a few. Like, yeah. Let it breathe.
Right. So... What else are we going to say about this thing?
Well, we didn't finish talking about Rogue.
Rogue.
Her storyline in this is she's decided that she wants to get the mutant cure because then she'll be able to have, you know, intimate physical touch, basically. She can't touch people.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing. I completely understand that. That makes all the sense in the world.
Of course.
And her power is, like, ridiculously dangerous and precludes her from ever being able to touch somebody. Of course she wants to get the cure. That could be the thrust of this movie. There's a mutant cure. Who wants it? Why? Is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it going to be used as a weapon? They try to do that. Magneto, of course, sees it as, this is bad. It's going to be used against us. We need to just destroy it. Everything is very black and white.
That story, though, should not have the Phoenix in the background.
No, you're putting too much in.
Right.
You do one or the other. You do the Phoenix storyline, or you do the mutant cure storyline.
They were also, to get back to Bryan Singer's original viewpoint, when they were going to have the Hellfire Club in this too. And I think they didn't have the mutant cure storyline in the original thoughts for this.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to have Sigourney Weaver playing Emma Frost, which is White Queen. So
that's cool.
Yeah, he definitely had ideas already, but it was going to be like a 3-team battle for Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't going to have this separate mutant cure side plot as well, which I don't know. In some ways that just feels kind of like lazy writing, doesn't it?
Which one?
Mutant cure guns?
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah, it's super lazy writing.
Yeah.
There's a cure. We can now neutralize all the mutants.
Yeah.
We have to destroy it. We got to burn it down. This movie is so dumb. You can tell they want to do what X2 did. They want to have, you know, ideas. But it lacks all the sophistication, and instead it's just throw everything... throw everything at the wall, see what sticks, that sort of thing. And their one way of making the movie seem dark and edgy is just kill as many characters as possible or strip their powers. That's it.
Because I'm a big boy.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yes. This is a pitch meeting reference. That's all the movie's got, though. It's its only idea is we'll just break things.
Probably one of the other memorable scenes in this film, good or bad, is Magneto taking the Golden Gate Bridge,
yeah,
pulling it apart and putting it onto Alcatraz.
Yeah, this lab is on Ellis Island for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Charles always wanted to build bridges.
That's a good impression.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. There's also a line that's reused in that end battle scene, and I don't know, this isn't that big of a deal. It just made me laugh. Magneto says twice, "We let the pawns go first." There's like two different "We let the pawns go first" line, and they're back to back. And I was like, they should have edited one of those out, clearly.
I love that too, because all these guys that are rushing are supposed to be mutants, and like there's really nobody with any kind of power.
They are the C team, the D team.
They're just running at them and like getting wasted immediately.
It's like, Magneto, you control metal. Like, yes, they're all using plastic weapons. You just moved a bridge. You could have just dropped the bridge on top of the opposing army. The problem solved.
You're right.
It's so stupid.
When I was like 20 though, and I saw this, I do remember like seeing that Golden Gate Bridge thing and being like, "Wow, that's fucking badass."
And I remember vomiting in my seat. All right, well, this is the beginning of me being a huge cynical asshole.
Now that I'm seeing it through 41-year-old eyes, I'm like, "Yeah, that's kind of silly."
Yeah, I get it. I turned into a jerk real early. This was it for me.
Cynical asshole at 10 years old.
100%. I was. We're going to do Star Wars pretty soon. And when we get to Attack of the Clones, Episode 2, that movie, that's my origin story of being suspicious of big movies. This is my origin story of being a Marvel hater. Episode 2 is my origin story of being having issues with movies like this. And I was like, that movie came out when I was 11. So you know, that's like old enough to start going, hey, wait a minute, we'll get there.
Yeah.
Is there anything else to say about this movie? It's just a big turd of an ending for this.
Well, let's talk about how it ends. So the Phoenix, like Magneto has been depowered.
Mm-hmm.
The Phoenix is like trying to do her thing where she melts everybody.
She, during the end battle, she just stands there and does nothing for 90% of the time.
Correct.
And then they depower Magneto. The soldiers show up and start shooting cure darts at her, and it freaks her out, so she just has a meltdown and then starts destroying everybody. Wolverine is the only one that can stop her because he has healing powers.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure the Phoenix Force could just rip him apart, right? No?
I mean, in theory, yes.
Okay.
In the comics, like, Wolverine has been melted down to a skeleton and regenerated.
Okay, well, whatever. So the end is Wolverine in some terrible CGI. Dramatically walking up to the Phoenix and then just stabbing her with his claws. So that's it for her.
In the original idea with Bryan Singer, he was going to have Jean Grey kill herself.
Mm.
To end the whole three-way war. Yeah,
for okay, Phoenix. Sure. Yeah, that would have been better. This whole idea sounds way better.
With those final moments, would you have rather seen her with Scott or with Logan?
In her final moments?
Yeah, say she was to kill herself in the original.
With Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Of course.
Yeah.
The only... I know they tried to do this love triangle thing between Jean Grey, Cyclops, and Wolverine, which was part of the cartoon as well. But the only attraction there is Hugh Jackman is attractive. That's it. There's no reason for her to be into him at all.
Famke Janssen was like extremely excited to do the Phoenix saga in this.
And then she got the script.
She was not very happy, yes.
Yeah, really?
Came out, yes.
Yeah, you don't say. I can't imagine why. She does nothing during the entire movie. She just stands there and looks around.
I know.
This basically killed X-Men for a while.
All the actors, too, had only signed on for two movies, so new contracts had to be brokered for all of them.
Oh, shit. Well, that's probably why the movie cost $210 million then.
No shit.
Because Hugh Jackman, at this point, big star. So, you know, that contract got pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
Halle Berry, big star. Ian McKellen, Patrick. These are big names in this movie.
How much would you say the Golden Gate Bridge scene cost?
$30 million.
You were fucking very close. Yeah. $35 million.
Okay.
1/6 of the entire budget for that scene.
Just for that scene?
Totally worth it.
100% worth it. Oh, God. It's kind of amazing, given this movie, like that 2 years later we got Iron Man. This is the type of thing that could kill a genre for like a decade.
Magneto did do this in the comics, though, with the bridge.
Yeah, he did?
Just to be fair.
Okay.
Not with the Golden Gate Bridge, though. It was with the Brooklyn Bridge.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah. Man, anything else we want to talk about here? Because I do have something else we want to shove in here as well.
Okay, yeah. My one question, and I genuinely don't know, was this the first Marvel post-credit scene? Because the post-credit scene is Professor Xavier transferring his body to somebody else.
Yeah, there's a dude in a hot... I think it is the first post-credits.
It's set up in the beginning part of the movie. There's a guy in a hospital bed who I think is a mutant, but he's completely catatonic. Like, he's a body with no soul. It's very weird, very dark. And then there's a little stinger of, at the mid-credit scene of Xavier. You just hear his voice saying hello, because it's Moira McTaggart that's
correct.
That's there.
She's like, Charles?
Charles?
Like, where are they going with this if they're setting up sequel bait when they like had such a finality? I know they tease that Magneto gets his powers back at the end.
Yeah, that's the thing that I didn't. Even at the time, I was so. And this was before pre MCU. This is before franchises, before all this stuff. Right, this stuff's just getting started. I was so confused about what they were going for with this. Like, okay, so the cure is temporary. We kind of get that set up, but still, half your lead characters are dead. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah,
I don't know. It's very confusing. I have no idea. It's hedging its bets, right? It's the final movie, final quote unquote movie. Obviously, there'd be 11 more X-Men films after this, but it can also leave sequel doors open.
Well, they retcon a lot of this shit in Days of Future Past, so.
And I've never seen Days of Future Past, so we'll do that at some point, because I've heard it's good, but I've also heard that's where the X-Men timeline officially gets so confusing that you can't follow any of it.
This is true.
Okay.
So before we get out of here, I want to talk about X-Men 97. What do you think about that little remix there?
I like it.
Okay.
Certified banger. What do you think?
I agree.
Yeah, it's good.
Are you caught up?
No, I've only seen the first episode.
Okay. So I guess we can just talk about that.
Okay.
I've seen all three.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fantastic.
I've heard nothing but good things, and I really enjoyed the first episode.
So one thing they do is make Cyclops a badass.
Love that.
And that pretty much continues on.
They don't cuck him and then kill him.
Yeah.
Incredible.
If you look back at the way the 97 series ended, Professor X gets shot by I can't think of the guy's name. Fuck. Anyhow, he gets shot
by
you're
talking
about one of the mutant haters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gyrick. Henry Gyrick.
Mm-hmm.
He gets shot by him. He's dying. The X-Men go to that island to have Magneto help. So the only way he can be saved is for the Shi'ar, which is aliens, that knows Professor X, come down and take him to their alien hospital. So he disappears.
Okay.
And there's questions if he can ever come back, like if he can ever survive in Earth again, right? So he goes off and does that, and it kind of, I don't want to say it picks up like the day after. It seems like there's been some time in between. So the X-Men are doing their thing. There's a group of like humans who have Sentinel technology, and they're trying to end mutants. The same old shit, right?
But yeah, we've seen this story before.
It's
yeah,
it's the way. The way it's written, the way it's animated, it's clearly aimed at us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's not aimed at little kids.
Well, I knew we were in an adult show when one of the scenes in the first episode is a closeted mutant in a like rave club doing ketamine bumps. And I was like, oh, okay. This isn't for kids, I don't think. This is for me.
Yeah.
It's not. I mean, at least in the first episode, it wasn't like a kid couldn't watch this. I think the adult stuff is subtle enough. Although I've heard there's some pretty on the nose sex jokes that are in some later episodes.
Well, the third episode in particular, when I'm sure you've seen the memes by now.
I've yeah.
like everybody was up in arms about Rogue not having, you know,
a big bosom,
a 10 out of 10 ass and all that. And then the Goblin Queen shows up and it's like, whoa, they're clearly not, leering away from the sexiness here.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I saw a little bit of that. I heard her and Magneto had quite a fight.
Yes.
Okay.
This is accurate.
I am looking forward to getting caught up. I do like that. Speaking of Cyclops, I like that him and Jean are like older. They're the older ones. They're adults. You know. Mm-hmm. In the first episode, they're talking about leaving the X-Men. They're starting a family. We're getting too old for this shit. That sort of thing. I like that. I would love to see them do that whenever the MCU does X-Men.
Well, hold on to your hats because things get turned upside down in episode 3 in regards to that.
Okay.
Magneto is now the leader of the X-Men. Charles Xavier left everything he has to him, which is weird.
It's very weird.
This does happen, though, in the comics.
That's how the first episode ends. It's very weird.
Yeah.
Why? I know Charles was always, you know, wants to see the good in everybody and Eric's his old friend, but he's evil also. He's the villain.
Yeah, he believes in mutant superiority, not living side by side.
Exactly. And why would you leave your army of unregulated super weapon humans to a man like that? That doesn't make a lot of sense.
So that kind of gets addressed in episode 2 as well, and like how he's, you know, trying to change and things like that. The thing with Morph, all the controversy about, oh, he's non-binary and all that, like, it's not really a thing. I mean, he's clearly gay in the show, especially when you get to episode 3.
Mm-hmm. Well, the showrunner said, we're not going to talk about him being non-binary, because you've pointed this out, and you're right. That term didn't exist in 1997.
Yeah.
So, and I don't blame her for getting out of this, you know, ahead of it and just saying that, like, yeah, we wrote him this way, but you're not really going to know about it. That's kind of a classic Disney move.
It's interesting too, because the guy that wrote this show, they fired right before this.
Yes.
And there's been speculation that he had an OnlyFans with like dick pics and feet worship things or something. I don't know.
Who cares? Ooh, if that's all he did, then who cares? I don't care. Do whatever you want.
Who amongst us has not posted a dick pic online?
Of course. look.
It's part of being an American.
We've done enough Bryan Singer bashing for this run of episodes, but
you gonna get one more in?
No, because I feel bad. I like Bryan Singer. That's the thing, but it's objectively funny. But not the first time we've had some questionable behavior from an X-Men director. So I don't know, or showrunner. So I don't know. I still think we don't have the full picture of why they let that guy go. There's probably something else going
problematic on behind the scenes,
something or, like that. You know, who knows? I don't know. But yeah, anyway, I enjoyed the first episode. I'm looking forward to getting caught up. We've mentioned this, but I am moving right now, and TV time has been extremely limited.
Yeah, we recorded this thing, by the way. I guess we'll just get to that now. We recorded this thing that we were going to put out on another clip show because I lost the Predator episode.
Oh, that's right.
We recorded a whole Predator episode, and it got compromised, and I couldn't get it back. And I never ended up releasing the episode. I just said, fuck, why? For what reason?
Was it completely gone? Just
the Predator episode?
Yeah, unusable. Yeah.
I couldn't find it. Yeah. That's how lost it was.
That sucks. That was a good episode.
Yeah. So Matt is moving. He's moving to Utah. For those of you that don't know, we live in California. So this is not just like throw some shit in your truck and drive down the street.
I'm not going down the street. I'm going way down the street.
Yeah. So the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire episode that we're doing next week, that'll be the final episode for me and Matt for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to have some things lined up to keep shit going, but we're going to continue the podcast. May sound a little different, but I think the theme is going to stay the same overall.
We're gonna change a few things up, I think, right here and there. But for the most part, we you know, this is what we love.
This is the thesis, I guess.
Yes.
Or the meat and potatoes of this show, so to speak.
Yeah, and it always will be, because we love talking about movies. We love talking about older movies, because new movies largely depress us. So we are going to keep that going. We're going to throw some other stuff in, make it, you know, change it up a little bit, expand. But largely, I don't think much is going to change, other than I need a few weeks to get myself sorted out. But as soon as I have an internet connection again and a microphone, we'll be back.
We'll still have the meat and potatoes, but occasionally we'll be serving up some vegan options.
Okay,
okay, well, maybe that's the wrong take.
I think that might be the wrong take. we're going to still be serving meat and potatoes, but occasionally we're going to have pizza.
There you go.
There we go. That
sounds way better.
Just something different.
We'll be offering up some gluten-free options.
Yeah, boo.
Yeah, but we plan to carry on, so I would say, you know, like we talked about, maybe beginning of May or something like that. We don't know exactly when.
It's not going to be too long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's it for this. I mean, you were pretty spot on, dude. Like, there's not a lot to say about The Last Stand. I'd highly recommend going and watching X-Men 97. This I do not. Let's stop at X2.
Yeah. Stop at X2, pick it up again for First Class. Just pretend X2 was it.
I agree.
God. Sucks. It sucks because this would be trilogy. The first two movies are so good. X-Men 1, really fun. X2, great movie. I think my favorite superhero movie. And then to have it end on this note is just, I will never not be disappointed by this whole thing.
I agree. It's what a somber note to end on.
I know, it sucks.
That's it for now. We'll see you guys next week. And till the next one.
Bye.